Hold on, let me just interject here. Please. Something apropos of nothing, but an earlier conversation. You guys know how in The Shining, everything is inverted from the movie and the book, so the red Volkswagen Beetle becomes a yellow Beetle.
Yeah.
And you see the red Beetle's crushed by the, you know, gas truck or whatever that's flipped over.
Yeah.
Well, then the yellow tennis ball becomes a pink tennis ball in the DVD release, but that's as close as you get to really red, because they don't make red tennis balls, but they make pink ones.
Huh. When he's bouncing that tennis ball, that's right after the scene where they say Luther has to clean up America. So it cuts from Danny and Wendy running in the labyrinth to Jack bouncing the tennis ball up and down, which he throws into basically nothing. He throws it into the darkness, and then he goes and looks at the labyrinth as an aerial view. And it was pointed out maybe by John Fell, right? I don't know. It was pointed out that that could be taken as a Mayan pyramid. If you cut the labyrinth in half and outline the structure of it, you can see this Mayan pyramid, which would put Danny and Wendy at the top of it, which would make them the sacrifice, or one of them the Golden Ray priest king that would kill the person who was handing their life over. But I find it interesting that he throws the ball out into the darkness, and then later on that same ball rolls, and just the time sequence of that it's something to,
is that like if it was a Mayan, if it was the sacrifice, is that like the head rolling
the tennis? Well, yeah,
right,
sure. Because that's what they did, they just cut the head off, right? That was like
Yeah, I mean, there's ideas that they used the head as the ball, or the loser got their head, the loser of the ball game got their head cut off.
The captain of the winning team got their head cut off.
Yeah, the winner got their head cut off.
And the loser has to clean up America.
And the loser has to clean up America. Which is the Americas, you know, I mean, that's like, it's all connected there, so, wow.
Okay, so when you first cut the head off, the head is yellow, but then after it's cut off and it's bleeding, it's red? It becomes a red tennis ball. I just want to backtrack a second here. In the comments, Trevor dropped in an Adam Sandler song called The Goat Song. Now, I've never heard this song before. I just looked at it. So it's all about the sacrificial goat, and then it brings us back to the goat song as tragedy. But there's also, isn't it Adam Sandler's movie company that's like 23, number 23 productions or something?
He does have a 23. Yeah.
Huh.
The scapegoat is a Jewish idea too. Doesn't that come from
That's where the term scapegoat comes from. And that's the basis for Christianity. So that they would project their sins onto an animal that was to be sacrificed. And they sacrifice the animal. And the animal takes their sins away with them, basically. It takes them on. And so Jesus himself, as the sacrificial lamb, or whatever, you know. Which is funny because I was connecting that in my mind earlier with Capricorn 1. Because Capricorn's the goat, you know. Literally the sea goat.
Yeah.
But that's interesting in terms of the way that Danny... you know, with his Apollo sweater going to stand, fake mission or whatever, if you perceive it through that lens, it's kind of crazy too because it's O.J. Simpson, you know, and so O.J. Simpson in Capricorn 1 is like the ultimate fucking like reality. It's like, I can't believe they canceled that show, the O.J. trial. Like, that was an awesome show. It's like, totally like, you know, I don't know. We were removed from the reality. You got a front, and it's like just showing how gullible people can be, like the extent of it with the whole charade of it, like so obvious, you know. But anyways, yeah, scapegoat, they'd sometimes actually push it off of a cliff, or they just set it loose and know that it's gonna go in the wilderness and probably not survive.
So I like OJ Simpson basically is Jack Torrance, though, the hacking his wife into little pieces.
Totally. Yeah.
O.J. Simpson, also... not a Jew. In Adam Sandler song.
That's right.
Wow.
I'm thinking that also, like, that Superman 4 or something is the scapegoat server. He takes the sins of the atomic weapons
and throws them into the sun.
Right, which of course Superman is the solar. He gets his powers from the sun, and he's the solar Superman. So to throw the atomic bombs into the sun is basically to take them into himself.
Totally. And Nietzsche says in The Birth of Tragedy that the etymology for Apollo is literally the shining one, whereas elsewhere it has him as the destroyer, which is interesting. Like, I have become, you know, I'm the destroyer of worlds. I am become time, the destroyer of worlds. And so you have the idea of Apollo connected to the sun, but then also Mars. And so that's kind of crazy in itself, too. So.
So, I don't remember what O.J. Simpson's wife's name was. Does anyone remember her wife's name?
Nicole Brown Simpson, yeah.
Okay. Because I was thinking there was the other guy that kept being, that was a huge part of that was like Kato Kalin or K2. Mm-hmm. It's like the, here we have our holy mountain again.
I was cutting open an avocado today, and I was like, I was calling it my avocado Kalin. We used to play a game on family trips where my sister and I would try and spot white Broncos and get points of OJ. You see a white Bronco, OJ, and you get a point.
Well, it's funny because Violator was talking about the Adam Sandler song where he mentions O.J. Simpson. He says, O.J. Simpson, not a Jew. But what's funny is I remember when the white Bronco car chase was going on, people kept people were lining up on the street and they were shouting, orange juice, orange juice. And they kept shouting this, and it started like just going like, juice, juice. Like, you have this sort of homophone effect of, Orange Jews. Who are the orange Jews?
It's like Jesus on the way to crucifixion and people yelling Jew at him.
Uh-huh. King of the Jews.
Yeah, that's exactly, yeah.
So, and then the orange juice shit around 9/11 for days. That's really weird. You know what I'm talking about?
The orange puffs?
There's all these orange juice things around it. One thing, like, obviously Breakfast in America, Lady Liberty's holding up the orange juice, but then there is the whole Trading Spaces thing around where they're trading for orange juice. So it all comes down to orange juice. It's like these guys made a killing on orange juice. I did a little Photoshop thing where I lay it all out. I'm looking for it right now. I'll show it to you guys.
So Bill wrote Clockwork Orange Juice.
Uh-huh. Okay.
So, I'm not sure what happened here.
Sorry. My phone disconnected my Skype for some reason, so now I'm on my computer, so it might sound a little harder to hear.
Oh, you sound pretty good.
All right, then.
So, I want you guys... To give us some information here. I mean, I know you have like wiki spaces and the Facebook group and stuff. What tell us a little bit about Project PsyCube.
I shall. we have these over 30 wikis, and then we have like over 30 Facebook groups, and this is all for these different interests that, you know, it's a lot of the stuff we're interested in, but we want to look at it through the eyes of Sync or through the eyes of figuring out conspiracy theories or whatever, and putting together different fictions and whatever. And just for an example, this literally goes from video games to hip hop, but Project PsyCube is, Trevor and Violator and I coming together and saying, you know, can we really make some books out of this stuff, or can we make this more beneficial than just another internet group or whatever? And we want to start with the stuff we're used to, like the cartoons and the video games, and the stuff we've been discussing forever personally, like the syncs between cartoons and different entities and X-Files or whatever, and hopefully, you know, want to turn this into like 2 or 3 books if the publishing world will let us, and as soon as we can, I guess.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of this stuff. Hey, Violet. There's a lot of this stuff collected in different places already. You know, we want to expand on it, and a lot of stuff that maybe, you know, I've specialized in for years, or Trevor, Violet, or Hezen, we want to bring that all into to the table in one place. It really covers so much data, I wouldn't know where to start or end. But if you guys have seen us doing anything fun, want to inquire about that, I'll be happy to.
Well, I guess I was curious if there was, do you have a centralized web? Because I know you have a Facebook group fetish, it seems to me.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know, and then I know there's some wiki spaces. I was curious if there was a website that we can give people, or is there?
I was actually working on that, and we didn't quite get to it. But the easiest way to access us is there's Stygian Port with Violator, the Secret Moon. We're all on and pretty attentive to. We'll be showing all of our work there. And then the Frank Zero page on Facebook is where the Project PsyCube articles from Examiner come out, anything that we collaborate on that's written. And then a lot of this other stuff we just have in the works, like books and videos and stuff like that. For more websites, I guess there's the Secret Moon website, then there's the Secret Moon Facebook group, then there's my older work is Reality Glitches, and then there's like an illuminated gaming wiki, whatever, and it goes out in every direction.
Just find us on Facebook. Like, I don't blog anymore. If you want to hear me say something, it's on Facebook.
I really don't have a online presence. Just one wiki page, and that's pretty much it. Just one wiki site.
Okay, no, that's cool. Like I said, I know there was so many groups, and I've seen different websites that I got confused as to whether or not there was a singular.
No, it's top secret. It's just us, and we're figuring out exactly how to make all this stuff pretty for the outside world. So far, we're just a mysterious name with three guys, two of which happen to be a Violator and an Apocalypse. So we can't get people's trust until the books come out, I guess.
I like it though. It's very, very lone gunman.
That's what we're going for. Yeah. Without the guns. We are not gunmen, just so...
Yeah, in case anyone's recorded. Listening.
No guns here, just men with a lone man.
Oh, the NSA just dialed in. Hold on, we have... is the NSA on the line? Yes, go ahead. So, you know, speaking of which, you know, we talked to X-Files, precog syncs, all this stuff. What does anyone make of the Lone Gunman episode? 9/11.
Well, I mean, I can, from a conspiracy standpoint, there's a microchip in an airplane that has pre-recorded destinations that someone pre-recorded, like wrote out the GPS coordinates of one of the Twin Towers, the South Tower, I think. So that gets put into the plane and no one knows it, but it's flying towards the tower instead of towards the airport it's supposed to land at, you know, under remote or whatever. And in real life, Raytheon, the like weapons manufacturer and contractor, who's all over the world in various like weird vortex sites and all kinds of like bizarre arcane stuff, they were developing in the 2000s, successfully tested in the 90s, I think, and also 2001, remote controlling of an airplane like under its own guidance systems instead of using the towers. So if a plane was hijacked, the pilot would flip a switch and the plane would land at like a pre-recorded airport like automatically on its own. So theoretically, if someone had messed with the computer chip on one of these planes and those hijacking switches were installed on the 9/11 planes, then the pilots would have hit the switch and it wouldn't have mattered that the one guy crashing Shanksville was so bad of a pilot they wouldn't even rent him a Cessna. And five like top executives from Raytheon died among the four planes that day too, which was weird.
That was actually in the original Loose Change. So the film Loose Change totally changed.
Like, I know.
That was weird. Like I went to show it to somebody after like a few years went by, and I was like, wait a minute, what the fuck is this? This isn't the documentary I saw where they show all the gold trucks leaving the rubble, all the armored cars like loading up, and they go straight from there to the New York branch of the Federal Reserve, just like in one straight line through the fucking Lincoln Tunnel or whatever. I was just like, wow, that's incredible. I want to show this to somebody. Oh, you can't find it anymore? Oh, that's weird.
Do you know what happened to Loose Change? Who got involved?
I don't know.
Alex Jones.
Is that what happened? What the fuck is that, dude? That was like some guy in his 20s, too, just threw that together initially, right? Like, so like, shortly after it happened?
Like Coney or something.
But it wasn't, if I'm not mistaken, wasn't Loose Change was, is that not like Jason Burmes or something? And then, I don't know, I feel like because they did end up doing three volumes of Loose Change. And I know it got a really Alex Jones feel to it after a while. And I feel like there was some involvement. I mean, I don't want to put that out there as a definite. That's probably a foolish thing to do without actually having looked into it. But I have this... Oh, sorry, so that's Dylan Avery. It's not Jason Burmes. But yeah, there was definitely, the first one was very different. Oh, okay, yeah, Jason Burmes, Loose Change Volume 2, Jason Burmes, Unknown Truth Movement, there you go. So, I don't know what changed there, but let's plane just to get the pilot to flip the switch.
Mm-hmm. Also, I think the things that are really worth noting there are that I believe in the plot of Violet, correct me if I'm wrong, they explain that the reason they're doing this is for our government to have some financial gain in the interest of terrorism or something like that. And then also that you know, Langley in real life ran into this psychic who told him the X-Files would be successful before the X-Files started. And then when the psychic was reached again, she explained that she was actually working for the CIA and she was supposed to go to these you know, posh science fiction movies and tell which science fiction writers were really on the ball and had the CIA's interest. In other words, tell them, you're going to do a good job. You should continue this. I'm a psychic. And then at the same time, she would have to bring back information to the CIA about what everyone was working on. And she was actually a psychic. That story is all one thing. So those two points are really confusing.
Hey, Alan, you live in New York. I don't know the layout of things, but I'm looking at the collage I did with, it has Supertramp in the corner that I think it was Wilner put together, where it has 9/11 backwards. Is the where the orange juice standing, is that where the Monolith Hotel is, the Millennium Hilton?
Oh, if you give me a second, I'll look it up. I'll have to look at the picture. I thought the orange juice was what the, like, essentially like the torch, the Liberty torch, no?
Is there it is. But she's holding it in front of the two towers, and so I was just like, I don't know. I'm sure it's probably lower than that.
Hold up. I'm sorry, I was just researching here, is that Loose Change, Final Cut, David Ray Griffin was a script consultant, and radio host Alex Jones was associated with the production of the film. Blah, blah, blah. So, yeah, Alex Jones got involved, and of course, Jason Burmes went on to get a radio show with Alex Jones and stuff like that. So,
and now it's on Netflix, so...
Yeah, there you go. Well, Alex Jones is on The Fucking View with, you know, Barbara Walters. I mean, how does that happen? How the fuck does that happen?
That's weird.
So, Supertramp, this is Breakfast in America...
This is funny. I did this, and I don't remember it occurring to me while I put in the other Supertramp album, Crime of the Century, where the guy has his hands like he's in prison floating in space. You know that album? Like he's got his hands on the bars. So you can see it. It's in the corner of this collage. But I was comparing it with the imagery here in Superman 2 when the people are basically imprisoned in these basically these floating glass in space. But I didn't realize how reminiscent and obvious that is, like, to the monolith. And then Supertramp came out with an album that was like their greatest hits album, which is a combination where it has the orange juice of Lady Liberty coming out from the bars, floating in space. So it's like both at the same time. It's like they synced it themselves. And so it's weird. Like if you look at that as like the torch of liberty, bars floating in space, and then you look at the fact that the monolith stands in front of the towers, and then here you have the monolith floating in space, and it says crime of the century, like in a century, like fucking the millennium, like the Millennium Hilton, like it's just on every level that's like a total sink.
Oh yeah, that's huge. Just so you know, so I'm looking at I found the I'm sorry, now I'm looking at your picture here. Now I know I see what you're saying here. What I was going to say is the looking at the Supertramp album, that orange juice is just the torch. Where the Millennium Hilton would be would actually be
on the left side.
Kind of like behind the towers from this perspective.
Right. Well, still, she's holding it in front. For me, that's like, that's enough of, you're putting the thing in front of the thing, you know, whatever, you know, but yeah, totally. To connect the torch through, like, to connect the torch with the monolith in the first place, in terms of what the monolith was for evolution, the torch itself is like, always kind of reminds me of like the fire from heaven, like a Promethean thing, even though she's obviously not Prometheus, but still, she's like holding the flame, you know, the fucking holder of the flame, like totally reminds me of Prometheus. And so I don't know, that's kind of an interesting connection there on many levels.
Yeah, that
there's
orange
a statue of Apollo that's like identical to the Statue of Liberty.
Weird.
So just for the record, so the monolith would be further inward, like towards the center of the island. So you have like the river here, and then so
right,
this is reversed. So in this picture, it would be to the left of the tower. Yeah, exactly. Right. On the, I guess, the non-reverse version, it would be to the right.
Right. Huh.
But okay, so when you say there's a statue of Apollo that looks like this, I mean, I was thinking that, you know, basically, are we looking at the orange juice, then, if Prometheus is, you know, basically steals the fire from the sun, you know, and it's sort of like stealing fire from the gods, but quite literally stealing it from the sun. And then you have this idea of the food of the gods, you know, so if it's the orange juice, it's that sort of ambrosia that you're actually stealing.
Right. What's weird with 2001 is they're suggesting, like, it's basically a challenge to the mind, because they put in front of you, they get the fire of knowledge, and then what do they do with it? They kill. They're like, oh, you can fucking make tools, and then what do you do with those tools but you murder? And so, from the get-go, you have kind of this, like, setting into motion, this kind of, like, divide and conquer. So if you look at 9/11 through like a 2001 lens, it's like pretty heavy duty, you know.
Oranges are golden apples. I'll just throw that out there.
Oh, yeah. the Discordian apple. Isn't the golden apple?
Yeah, Discordia. Yeah.
Yeah. So. It's like throwing if I remember the story correctly, it's like the golden apple thrown as the gift of to make chaos amongst the gods themselves.
Yeah.
So it's sort of just throwing that hint of discord into it. So yeah, definitely the orange. That's a pretty good idea of what 9/11 was. Like,
anyone ever notice all the oranges in movies, or is it just me?
What's
the amount of oranges?
Space them out.
I mean, like in Ninth Gate, you know, he leaves the apartment of that French author who has one copy of the book, and she's, you know, someone knocked him out and then set the place on fire, and he runs past the chick's like bodyguard secretary and knocks over her grocery bag and like 9 oranges come tumbling out, and the camera follows them down 2 flights of stairs while Johnny Depp's running out.
Wow.
Yeah. There's there's so many. Just, I can't even, I think in Indiana Jones, the last one, when he goes into the refrigerator, is it an orange that's blocking the door from closing?
Yeah, totally. And isn't it an orange in Empire of the Sun, where the Christian Bale, who's Batman, holds the fucking orange and the he's like, his friend is going to cut it with the samurai sword, and then his friend gets shot, and the blood goes down the samurai sword and goes all over the orange. Do you remember that?
I haven't seen that, but...
Yeah, that's a crazy orange.
I mean, also, really, just think of oranges when you watch movies. They're everywhere for some reason.
Yeah, Peter Fonda says, that he holds the sun in his hand in The Trip, where he's there with Dennis Hopper, and he's coming on, he's got the first rising vibes of the LSD, and he's looking at the orange, and he's all, I'm holding the sun in my hand. It's like, yeah, that's a good one. We should do a sync video on that, just all the orange shit. And then also, Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind, that her name is Clementine, and then it's Eternal Sunshine, and then you have, a clockwork orange, like looking at the sun as clockwork, you know? It's pretty...
Well, I think it's interesting if you said it. I've never seen the last Indiana Jones, but if it's the... Isn't he going into the refrigerator to, hide from an atomic blast?
Yeah.
So here you have the atomic blast of our Oppenheimer and even Raytheon. Raytheon was created by a guy whose last name was Bush, who worked on the Manhattan Project. One of the lead scientists of the Manhattan Project, whose last name was Bush, is the founder of Raytheon.
Another burning Bush.
Yeah. That's, to see all those correlations. But isn't there, I remember, I think it's ecstasy, where if you just drink orange juice...
Yeah, they say that with LSD, too. It's not. I don't know if that's actually true.
Yeah.
That the ascorbic acid somehow assists. Different people say different things. Some people say it mellows it out, and some people say it intensifies it. They have all this whole... I don't know how true any of it is.
I think you can pretty much tune into whatever you want with it at that point. You know what I mean? If you believe it's going to make it more intense... I've actually experienced that, but, that was a hell of a moment when I was drinking that orange juice, so I don't know if it was me or if it was the juice.
Yeah, I've been on LSD where water was that. Oh my God, everything is water. We're made of water. This water is life. Oh my God, this is the greatest thing ever. This water has just made it the greatest thing ever. Hmm. Yeah, you don't need it. I'm sure orange juice is delicious, too.
To go back to the oranges real quick, me and William were talking about Lost a while ago. There's this one scene, I think, in one of the first few episodes where Locke actually, takes a peel from the oranges and puts it in his mouth,
The Godfather?
Yeah, he's referencing that scene. And, that scene in The Godfather where, I think, the Don dies, so yeah, I don't know. Something. I don't know if there's going to be something there, but
throw it in the video.
Someone's writing this down, right?
We're recording always.
Always
can always go back.
Okay. We're like Big Brother. We're always recording.
It's funny. I listened to the White Album yesterday, or the second LP of the White Album, and first of all, that's really eerie. There's a lot of weird shit with the White Album. But I could have sworn I heard Clementine referenced in the White Album in one of the songs. So I was just trying to do a search to see if I could find out where it was. But I don't know. Whatever.
Isn't the song Honey Pie?
Yeah, I thought it was Honey Pie. Yeah, totally. Yeah, good call. Honey Pie. The Revolution number 9?
Yeah.
That's really weird.
Is that the one where it just repeats number 9?
Number 9. Number 9. Number 9. Yeah, that's really weird.
There's a Vietnamese restaurant right here that's called Number 9, and I just think about that every time. Number 9. Number 9.
Do you ever play...
Well, we have...
You ever play that game with the White Album where the challenge is to boil down both discs into one disc and make a side A and a side B, and it's always a major decision whether or not to include Revolution Number 9? Is it important? Is it not important? I guess to simplify it, if you had to make the White Album just a single album, would you include Revolution Number 9?
Of course.
Yeah, it's best.
Is it essential, and why is it essential?
Because it's awesome.
That's what I said.
That's basically the answer, yeah. I'm curious to hear these guys take, though. You know, the number nine, you have, of course, like the Aeneid and things like that. But there is within, like, UFO culture and all this sort of stuff, there is the concept of the nine. Can any of you guys talk to that?
Well, Trev, you want to roll that one up, or you want me to start it and end it, or?
You can start it.
Okay. Well, as far as I can tell, and that's mostly based off of Clive Prince's The Stargate Prophecy book, that Roddenberry made contact with these entities shortly after the original series was filmed, and that there were these nine entities. It was like these nine elitist types that got Roddenberry interested in this seance. And they started talking to Roddenberry directly and saying that he was a conduit for a sort of alien message or whatever. You'll have to look at all the literature to see the specifics of it. And so this has been interpreted, you know, by many different groups as different entities. But as far as that story goes, it seems that then Roddenberry really felt a push to start representing aliens in the way they wanted to be represented, as silly as that sounds. And even though this is dated as after the original series, I see the original series as having the most clues into this, you know, plan that talks about all kind of ancient entities we know on Earth and interprets them as just some aliens. And then at the same time is trying to play this political card about how we're going to accept them and things like that. I've made a lot of comparisons between Roddenberry and Kirby, and I'll explain that at some other juncture. But essentially, there's Deep Space Nine, and then there's these nine, main people on the crew in Next Generation, as Christopher Knowles points out in some of his work. And then there's all these other connections that go all the way to Obama and the people who are involved in that seance group being involved in, you know, a lot weirder measures and weirder organizations. It's quite a mystery. It's just, if you stare at that, the Star Trek magazines and science fiction magazines around the time that we're describing, you see them littered full of, you know, the works of Gene Roddenberry that never came out, or the drop scripts or whatever. And everything from the God Machine to one literally called the Nine seems to ring really loud of him trying to express this data. And then in channeling Gene Roddenberry, I've, you know, confirmed this, but that's not a confirmation of anything, is it?
Do you want to talk about that at all?
let's see what would be wise. Give me a second. Go, Trevor. You got it.
One thing I was gonna add was that about the nine. The interesting about this is that, I don't know, like, are any of you guys Philip Jose Farmer fans? Have you read any of his books?
Say the name again?
Philip Jose Farmer. He's mainly known for the River World series.
No, don't know it.
Alright, so, little background information here first on one of the things that I want to talk about in our upcoming works is that, so like, in Farmer came up with this concept called the Wold-Newton universe concept, and or Wold-Newton family concept. And basically, in 1795, this meteor crashes in Wold-Newton, and then these people are passing by in their carriages. They're doused with the radiation, and so the radiation sort of like mutates their offspring, and these people are actually the ancestors of famous characters like Sherlock Holmes, Tarzan, Doc Savage, James Bond, all those characters. And so there's this one this one novel farmer wrote called A Feast Unknown, and basically it features like Tarzan and Doc Savage analogs fighting each other, and it turns out they're the puppets for this group called the Nine Unknown. And so, and the interesting about that is Philip Farmer actually, I think he wrote like a few episodes for Star Trek that were never aired, so it's a bit of a connection to Roddenberry as well. And actually Star Trek is part, like, one of the main future timelines of the whole Newton universe, so yeah.
Yeah, I had a look at my own website. Is that lame or what? To remember some key points here. But, you know, Roddenberry was talking to this disincarnate voice that identified itself as one of the Nine. And he said, "To whom am I talking? Do you have a name?" And he said, "As you know, I am a spokesperson for the Nine. But I also have another position, which I have with you and the project." It's not really entirely clarified what this project is, but there seems to be a lot of tie-ins between people's remote viewing and other conspiracy theories, like I found in the cartoons and movies or whatever, and different Star Trek plots. The animated episodes, The Magics of Magus 2, as well as How Sharp a Serpent's Tooth. You know, the How Sharp a Serpent's Tooth, you guys will see some of that in the cartoon book or whatever, but there's just a lot of really interesting links between flying serpent deities saying that they, established the first civilizations and that we never figured out the psycho-spiritual technology to link back with them. And Magics of Magustu has Spock bent over drawing a pentagram in order to deal with a goofy character who calls himself Lucifer and another Asmodeus who teleport the crew back to Salem for the witch trials, and they have to prove that their spaceship and things aren't like Lucifer's ritual magic, which Kirk and Spock eventually have to employ to save the rest of the crew and get themselves back on the ship. Very bizarre stuff.
It's Pan, right? Doesn't Pan lead them there as Satan? Like, he looks just like Pan?
He is unmistakably Pan, but he says he's Lucian in this really creepy way, which is obviously... Yeah.
Dude, I love those cartoons.
They are.
I can't believe that, like, they did that in the first place. The whole what's his fucking name? The Quetzalcoatl serpent character at the Mayan pyramids and his whole explanation of everything. That's like, yeah, that's weird, man.
Yeah, and the whole way that they have to move around parts of the ancient civilization to bring the aliens or the spiritual, the old gods back is something that I see more in cartoons than I see it in knowledgeable archaeology or whatever. It's bizarre.
Yeah. Huh. So I'm trying to remember how many immortals there were so there were these people who died at the beginning of the Nazi movement, and they basically made them into immortals, and I was thinking that there was 9 of them, because there's like one of the biggest fucking castles in the world or whatever that was constructed or like revamped by Hitler for their idea of when they took over the world and everything was set, they were going to have this spot, and they built this fucking spot. And there's like these designated points in the main like area of the place that's like for, I believe, the 9 immortals like to stand in. It's super weird.
Okay, but are we talking about any kind of similar channeling as in the Vril, the Buell, or any of these organizations might have had people doing that, or?
Well, the thing is, it's like it's theosophical in a really weird way, right? Like the whole Aryan thing in the first place, it's their interpretation of Blavatsky. But yeah, it's Blavatsky, but then it's not at the same time, because in the same way that like they used Darwin for all, they used Nietzsche for all, like Nietzsche, like it's like, okay, they run off with these ideas that, you know, but anyways, whatever, that's fanaticism. And I believe it was 9 immortals, like, I don't quote me on that, and I was wrong about Clementine in the Beatles song, but I think it's in another one, but that's whatever.
yeah, I gotcha.
Anyways,
so you mentioned China. On my blog back in June, if you look at Great Geek in the Sky Part 5, there's a breakdown here. You have in China the Shenzhou 9 spacecraft.
Is he there?
He's not.
They got him.
So you guys want me to repeat this 9 thing? Maybe I'll do it at the end so everybody's not bored to help.
I don't really get bored.
Say stuff again.
Yeah, you can continue to say stuff.
Okay, I just don't want that part like lost for the recorded record, because that's something we've definitely been brewing on forever, you know.
Well, let's see. You went into the 9. Alan asked you if you wanted to go into your personal channeling experience.
Yeah.
And you covered the history, and you brought it into Blavatsky and Germany. And
yeah.
I think we got most of that on tape.
Okay.
Can you jump off from there?
Yeah, I guess I'll just go into my own experiences with Jack Kirby or whatever. There was a like 2 or 3 week period, I guess, where I was really intensely actually trying to channel them after like contemplating for some time and gathering around the Star Trek and the Marvel related idols to do such a thing. And I used a very like haphazard kind of Grant Morrison, Christopher Hunter Myers, no offense to either of those fellows, like chaos magic approach. I just trying to envelop myself in the stuff and watch the stuff all day and really feel like I was in their mind and their world. And I also have this weird problem where I like get into something, it doesn't matter if a musician or an actor or whatever, and I just start method acting it. And so after collecting all these things related to them or whatever, and then getting down exactly their character, I began like these nightly kind of channeling things. And Jack Kirby wound up being, I mean, you know, I realize this sounds insane, but this is what channeling happened. Jack Kirby was super, super helpful and would constantly actually be giving me ideas when I should be sleeping. And he'd be explaining to me ideas about, like, the industry or whatever. This is how I was interpreting it. I mean, ideas about if I could bring some of his characters back, and he didn't care because he thought Marvel didn't own him anymore. So then these specifics about how to draw or write and think about characters, whatever, to really weird moral stances I wouldn't have taken myself. And, I did what would Jack Kirby do. Then with Gene Roddenberry, it was a very similar kind of stuff. I was working on comic books at the time, so I wanted the influx of both of their imaginations. But the Gene Roddenberry thing cut off in a weird way, where it's like I might have channeled him 2 or 3 times or had like short, sort of meditated, weird magic conversations with him. And then there was this final time when I tried to connect with him, and I felt like his energy was really, really superficial. If you can kind of imagine in your mind's eye, I saw Gene Roddenberry, at his older age, but not his oldest, perhaps how he preferred to be seen or something weird like that. And he was like trying to explain to me something I don't remember. I couldn't hear him clearly. And he just seemed like fake to me. And then I kind of dived out of my body in a sort of out of body experience. And I was sort of falling like you would in a really bad trip. I wasn't on any psychedelics or anything. And then at the bottom of this void, I felt like I landed somewhere that wasn't at all a place I was used to. And I got up and I saw this creature that was like, I mean, I really can't explain it. It was like humanoid because it had legs and arms, but it was just otherwise totally weirdly shaped, like something, you know, you'd draw when you were 12 or something that would never make it to a movie design, but it'd be in one of those like sci-fi illustrated paint collections or something. And the thing looked at me, it recognized me, and I, or at least like saw that I was there. And I was so just terrified by how alien it was, you know, because I thought the 9 and all the aliens I researched, all these different kinds of aliens, you know, greys or reptilians, I'm sure I've gotten past my, if I actually run into them, fear, you know. And this thing was just so alien that I sort of shot myself back up out of my astral body or whatever, right back into my physical body, and almost immediately started analyzing it and realized that that thing could have been Gene Roddenberry, or that thing could have, maybe Gene wanted me to meet that thing or whatever, but the thing definitely wasn't scary. It didn't seem like it brought me into a world. It seemed like I just landed right next to it, and it was going to turn around and start explaining something, like every time somebody fell next to a noob in that part of the underworld or something. But I was terrified. That was about the end of that. But from there, there was just constant thoughts about, you know, Starfleet, the Enterprise, Jack Kirby's world of Asgard, and the Fantastic Four, whatever. And that lasted for a while until I decided to focus my energy direction.
Heavyweight, man.
Who are you?
So that's Heavyweight.
Oh. Yeah.
But you communicate the experience very well. It definitely seems like you have a handle on it.
Thank you. Well, I mean, it's never anything that's overwhelming me. Stuff like magic is stuff that I decided to go into on my own, or channelings or whatever on my own. I'm feeling really brave. And the same kind of bravery is like playing a video game or watching mind control movies for 15 hours straight and seeing where I get. And then I just, you know, I go into something else the next couple of weeks. It's unhealthy and just go back and forth between that kind of stuff. But I definitely put all the conspiracy stuff in a bracket where I just consider it studying more comics or whatever that some people consider reality. You know, it's easier. And then I can just go, you know, take a walk or pet my cat, and I'm not getting immersed in this stuff and going crazy.
Well, that's the wall, isn't it? Right? I mean, we, from an early age, we are taught how to build these walls for our own protection. But, you know, at a certain point, you want to tear down the fucking wall and see what's going on there. You know, open the door. But it's amazing the detail with which you describe your experience, you know? It's fascinating.
I don't know where I should go from here. I guess I'm not a new contact experiences, something like that. But I read so much about the stuff, and I'm so deeply, heavily involved in the research that I often don't like talking about it, because it kind of cracks away at my credibility as a researcher, you know, if you're involved in any of this stuff yourself. So, like, for art reasons or whatever, I'm always happy to put it out there. And then otherwise, I want to just seem like somebody's looking at the facts or whatever, you know, to help out whatever people might be involved in the serious side of the stuff.
Well, as long as you're open to all kinds of explanations and possibilities of what's going on, then that's fine. I mean, and it's common enough. I mean, people have contact experiences pretty regularly. I mean, that's not that far out at this point. I mean, I don't think it's ever been, but there was a man doing a presentation that me and Amy stumbled upon a few years ago at Burning Man, who had cured himself of AIDS for real. Like, he was diagnosed HIV positive, and he went to the Amazon and was doing all this ayahuasca work and went completely raw, like, for, and have been ever since. And just like, but he looks fucking super healthy, and it's just like really intense, dude. Like, his eyes are just like, and he was basically talking about contacting alien intelligences as being like, he was like going step by step of like why this is so misunderstood and what are we talking about. We need to clarify and not, you know, jump to different ideas like too quickly about what it is that you're dealing with, especially if you're having the experience yourself. But he actually was saying, first of all, we're all one, you know, and this is something that is like people will say and throw around, but what that actually means in terms of being distinct but not being separate, and in terms of that there's all kinds of intelligences. So he's like, I prefer the word intelligences, which is something that left a mark on me, and I considered that ever since. But he would do work with people where he would scan people's bodies, and like he'd have like demonstration, like someone would come from a group who is, you know, just there, and she'd be like her body would be like lifting up, not like levitating, but like she'd like be super expanding, and she's just laying there with her eyes closed, and like he'd go over a certain part of her body and she'd just totally react to it, you know. Yeah. And he was saying like basically had intelligences coming through him that he was letting take over to a degree, and it was a trip, man. But he was like, these intelligences are what cured me of AIDS. Yeah. Wow, dude. Yeah, it was. I was really. It left a huge impression on me. I took it pretty seriously. I don't always go for all that kind of business, but it was pretty unmistakable that the guy was authentic. You know.
Yeah, a lot of these people. I mean, I get worried because a lot of these people have red herrings kind of wrapped up in their cases, or if they can physically heal people and their contact experiences, they still insist on using some terminology about a galactic brotherhood or whatever. And so what it seems to me is that as believable, as real as I think a lot of these people's stories are and they are victims, they are getting other content programmed in that's always supposed to make them seem stupid. And so there's like that fundamentally works because, you know, just society in general knows that the New Agers are the New Agers and the alien abductees are the people in movie with tinfoils on their head or whatever. And so that, you know, the demographic division happens so violently and severely for these people when they start trying to come out and explain their cases. It's very hard to collect a bunch of them, take out all the red herrings and say, you know, here's a narrative that they all actually are experiencing. Can someone at least say this, you know, for once?
Right. He was like, they're us. Like, he was like, you talk about aliens, and that's completely the wrong terminology. Because if something's alien, then you're missing the point. It was like, these are aspects of ourselves. And yeah. They just basically want in. And the contact is completely misinterpreted, because even the notion of contact is something from outside and in. And he was like, this is something from inside. We want to get out.
Completely backwards. And the propagation of the UFO phenomenon, and the idea that it's this external possible enemy, as we've seen in movies, just flying around, that we can make an entire cult out of idiots who stand on mountains and take photos of dots and try to quantify that. And then meanwhile, you have these contact experiences, which is something that can be immediately studied, and these people can be talked to, and they are brave enough to say their story, whatever, and it's not so looked at. So the whole cult of disinformation comes out of, if we take a good enough picture of this dot in the sky, then Larry King will take us, you know, for real, and the whole world will believe in UFOs, and our religion will be true, and, you know, a violent misunderstanding of how to go about that, you know?
That's completely missing the point, as soon as you start externalizing it too much, or could be, you know, and then again, you could have government UFOs, and you have a fucking flying saucer. It could be a military craft, you know? Who the fuck knows?
Well, how much easier to set up a psychological operation if you already have all the quote-unquote alien craft yourself?
Right.
And I'm not saying they're alien craft. I'm saying you just figured out how to go fast.
Right. Exactly. Totally.
Can I just play devil's advocate here for a moment?
Yes.
So, you make an excellent point about, you call it an alien is the wrong thing, because how are we different? How are we separate? But then you say, or it could just be a government project and make that jump. I'm very much no fan of the government. You know, as a pretty hardcore anarchist, I'm not trying to make this argument so much, except to say, how is that government separate from you? If the alien is not actually external, how is the government side up external?
Right.
Oh, not at all. But you're creating.
Yeah, go ahead.
I'm sorry. You're creating the same opposition by saying these evil elitist guys got with these evil alien guys, evil Nazi guys, and then your impression of the polar opposite of you, whatever you're supposed to be combating, becomes so inflated and involving so many factors that you have to hear it. You know, like, oh, I live in the South, and, you know, I got my shotgun in case anybody, New World Order knocks my door. Well, then, you know, unconsciously, the New World Order means all this other stuff in the conspiracy literature, and that does affect, I think, everybody in some way. I'm sorry, Dave.
Well, no, I just want to qualify. When I was saying that, I was actually literally referring to flying saucers being specifically. Now, a lot of people who have abduction stories, you know, could consider that they're in sleep paralysis, you know, and are open to other explanations, and that maybe the hallucinations that they experienced are universal because they're archetypal and they're the mind's way of communicating something that was its closest approximation to something that is intangible, as far as we're concerned, you know, third dimensionally. So, you know, there's all those kind of things. But then again, I consider government in the first place. Like, we say government, but then we also say democracy. and then we define democracy as a government by the people for the people, which we've never seen. And then if it's by the people for the people, how does the government like to govern? Like, everything is completely convoluted and doesn't make any sense. That's why, like, it's like, oh, okay.
I'm sorry, man. I think that most deductees are very open to the idea of remembering them being passed through walls or seeing people in camouflage or being told something about portals of the future, the race, whatever. And most of them are less likely to believe the just nuts and bolts UFO scenario. I'm sorry, man. I interrupted you with something else to say to the second half.
You didn't actually. I was done.
Okay. There was something else I forgot. To divide from, again, that Jungian idea that the UFO represents this, the unconscious or whatever. I think if you talk to most of the abductees, and that is a far thing from experiencers and contactees. But if you talk to most of the abductees, they see a lot more going on and are convinced there's a lot more going on than what was, like, popularly believed somewhere between like 76 and 1990 that, you know, they would come down in a UFO and take you for the specific purpose and whatever, you know.
Right. This is coming from, I have a friend who has night terrors, has always had night terrors, and he was researching sleep phenomena, and I myself have sleep paralysis, less these days, but I've had it quite a bit in my life, lucid sleep paralysis, where I'll wake up and I can't move and I feel that I'm being held there by another who's over me. This is also where the idea of the succubus came from, you know? But anyways, like when you look at message boards, this is what my friend was telling me. He's like looking at these message boards and people going back and forth talking about their sleep dysfunction. And a lot of these people were like, wow, what you're describing, I took as that I was abducted. And I can consider these different explanations for things. And also, I don't think that this is meant to downplay the significance of the event in any way whatsoever. Like, it's something we can't explain completely anyway. Like, we get the most vitality in the course of the night during a state of paralysis. And it's usually not accompanied by dream hallucinations, though it can be. And when it is, they tend to be these universal symbols, like the image of Ray has to correspond with that, which is really fucking far out, you know? I don't know.
I always hesitate with that because in going through just thousands of these cases for as long as I can remember being alive, these people never recount that they're paralyzed and then they see a strange being and there may or may not be a UFO or whatever. They have a really detailed, like, I saw this thing with this piece of technology and it just did this at my dog and my dog just stopped. My dog never stops. He would bark at it and treat, you know, and then you go to the next case. They all came around my bed and took out these pieces of technology and then floated me into the whatever. And then you go to the next case. He had a psychic, you know, communication with me about this or that, but it's not like they're in any kind of drugged or dream state other than the fact that if you really press them hard for details, they may be so under the conviction that you're trying to convince them it didn't happen, that their reality did exist, that they'll start defending themselves in like almost overly anxious ways, and they won't remember the floor tiles of the UFO, or they won't remember seeing the ceiling or something like that. Even though there's that many inconsistencies, the consistencies in the narrative of exactly what's happening to people has like 70 parts. And I think people often think that, you know, the aliens show up and then someone just assumes they're abducted and then whatever. But when you really, really look at all these things, the exact same thing happening to people, the only difference is some will classify it, this is the hardcore my lab. People came in and camouflaged and fucked me and my family up, and they took us in this craft that operates like a UFO, that it's just a very high-tech craft and whatever, and that seems to be something completely different. Although there's, you know, my labs with mantis beings and greys all hanging out or whatever, and those are up in the hundreds. If you take most cases, the narrative is just impeccable. And no, you can't find this anywhere in a film, because I've gone back and watched every movie about aliens, and there's always, like I'm saying, in the abduction cases with huge red herrings where somebody sees, like, Bugs Bunny, and it just seems like they're supposed to throw off their entire otherwise step-by-step explanation. There's nothing in these movies, or the movies don't hold tight so well to the abduction phenomenon in the X-Files that it could
but,
be.
You know, transpersonal psychology, the early days of transpersonal psychology when they had total freedom before everything got all restricted, there's these repeated incidences where people were able to like tap into information that they shouldn't it shouldn't just be really, like, if you haven't studied something, you shouldn't know this stuff. And they would go on for days, like, being questioned about stuff and basically giving answers back that were just totally in line with, like, they'd have reptilian experts coming in and, like, analyzing, like, after the fact, like, they'd be being interviewed by somebody else. And then these experts look through their explanations of things, like, someone would think that they're a reptile, and then they get, like, turned on by the other individual who they see as a reptile, and they're like, well, what part about this person's exciting, and to be like, oh, the size of their temple, you know, and it turns out that that's like the erogenous zone of like a reptile. It's like, of what they get excited. Like, it's like, and then rebirthing processes where there's all this shit that they shouldn't know, like in terms of the processes. Like, there's things in our consciousness that are so, like imagery that it's like, where does that come from? How is that possible? And we don't have any real explanation, but like every time we've tried to explore that in any real way, with funding and doing it the way you're supposed to do it, those projects tend to get shut down, out of fear or whatever, you know,
or publicly, publicly shut down.
So it makes it very difficult.
Yeah.
Hey, Frank, I want to throw something at you here. You made mention of the people's experiences and then that sort of random red herring, and you used the Bugs Bunny example. Well, in the movie Explorers with Ethan Hawke and what's his name? River Phoenix and Ethan Hawke, right? Explorers, and they're little kids and they go out into outer space. Do you remember the first line the alien speaks to them?
I'm actually checking my website on that. I'm not sure. What is it?
The first thing the alien says to them is, "What's up, Doc?"
That's pretty funny. I mean, of course you've seen Whitley Strieber's Communion, right?
Yeah. Right.
Yeah, this is the most readily available example I can use of someone telling a pretty standard abduction story, even if it involves all the screen memories, whatever. And right in the middle of the experience, there's like dancing aliens, and these aliens look like they're 2D and whatever. And this is the thing, this is the exact thing I'm referencing, where it's like, after studying it this many years, I know exactly what happens to people, and it's not 10 things, it's 30 things. But then they always add like two things that are very bizarre, and they also include seeing memories from their own, or characters from their own memories, or cartoonish looking version, 2D hologram looking versions of what they're supposed to be saying.
Can I jump in here real quick? You've seen, Closer to the Light? No, that's a book. Fire in the Sky. About the wood.
Fire in the Sky?
They were abducted. And they thought he killed the guy. He showed up like days later, naked, somewhere. Well, when he was in the ship, and I love that scene in the movie. It's a very small, part of the movie, the alien ship, but it's just so freaky. And he's getting dragged through a hallway by his feet, and he's kind of levitating. I think he's like not dragging on the ground. He's being pulled through this hallway, was just filled with detritus. It's clothes, crap, junk. Like if someone's really dirty car was like overthrown and a purse was like emptied out in that hallway, and he like hits these glasses and they spin around because it's levitating. Well, that reminded me of the blog Luminosity, where the guy was talking about his sort of alien experience, where he goes to this parallel kind of world and he sees someone who's a friend of his, and but he knows this guy's dead, and then he questions him and he's like, oh, where are you like right now? And he's like, gives this knowing look like, okay, he caught me. I'm not really a friend. I'm really this entity in this kind of land of the dead alien world, of elves or whatever. So anyways, I was looking through some videos, and there's this chief medical officer of Finland who wrote a bunch of books on the paranormal. And she was at a conference where she was taken into a back room
through like three or four huge steel doors, like she's going into a bank vault, and it's this room lined with UFO pictures, like pictures from all around the world of UFOs and stuff, and there's a map of Russia with all these pins on it, and her guides aren't like telling her anything. She didn't speak Russian, and she's in Russia, so I don't think they had any communication. But they take her a picture of Anatoly Malkiev, and basically that confirms for her that that guy's story was true, because his picture is in this room filled with, you know, UFO things from around the world, and that's, you know, behind three huge steel doors. And so Anatoly Malkiev was a woodworker who was, I'm just reading my notes here, greeted by humanoids, a UFO offered him a ride in a ship. They fly past the moon, and he sees lights on the dark side of the moon, and he says, what's that? And they said, there's bases on the moon. It doesn't say whether they're human or alien bases. Then they find him on a planet where he's greeted by his dead relatives and friends who are all in perfect health. And they're like basically light bodies, non-corporeal, you know, the souls, basically, like how they looked in their last life. And they give him the message that we're all one and stuff. And so you have the ETs. They basically say, like, E.T., like, his guides there, those people on that planet and the living people are all one somehow. And there was something about that, I can't remember, but there's all this stuff about, like, machinery, Saturn. Like, if you look at Beetlejuice and the Land of the Dead, where they walk out of the house, they end up in this desert world that's like dune, sandworms and stuff, in a script that's actually Saturn, or one of the planets around Saturn, which I think is probably supposed to be Titan. And in the script, there was supposed to be another scene where they saw a huge, like, machinery and gears going. And that's a representation of this, like, afterlife world of weird stuff. And in the movie A Quiet Earth, it's like a last man on the planet kind of thing. Everyone that died at the moment of this event actually lives, and everyone else disappears. Then this guy tries to stop the next event from happening. He dies again in this death, and ends up on a beach watching Saturn rise on the horizon. And there's this weird, there's all these like connections with Titan, Saturn, you know, 2001 A Space Odyssey, Land of the Dead, Kronos, you know, God of Time and Gears, and I can't even remember some other stuff about this that kind of connects to like spirits like on Titan or something like that, like aliens and I don't know.
I've written about the Watchmen, the Alan Moore's graphic novel, even before the movie. It seemed so many correlations with a Kurt Vonnegut book called Sirens of Titan, which ends with people going to live on Titan, the moon of Saturn. And there's so many correlations between Watchmen and Sirens of Titan that it's kind of crazy. It feels like it might be sort of, you know, reappropriated in some way by Alan Moore.
Right.
And
remember, he's a Thelemite to the max, which is interesting.
It's interesting because Kurt Vonnegut is not, you know, he considers himself like a humanist, but he mentions in, I think it's in Time Quake, he mentions about how into astrology his wife is and numerology. So it's like obvious that he was still affected by, even if he himself publicly proclaimed a very, you know, human-centered philosophy, he was exposed to all the stuff of numerology and astrology and probably incorporated that into his work.
Yeah, Slaughterhouse-Five, dude, fuck. Yeah, but I was considering just the other day how, first of all, the Lucis Trust was behind the initial website and really pushed for the Occupy movement in the first place, which you can look into, which is really interesting. But I thought it was strange, just realization of looking at the fact that this mask of, like, the anonymous, like, the whole V for Vendetta theme, it's like they gave this to the happening, you know? How funny it is that that's like Alan Moore and like his total Thelemite perspective. Like, that is his expression of the Crowleyan philosophy. And then that ends up becoming like the symbol for the Occupy movement. It's kind of interesting.
Interesting.
Weird, wild stuff.
I know we only got 10 minutes here. I want to give you guys a chance to plug anything you want to plug here at the end, but real quick, I don't know if there's a way to have a quick answer on this, but there's something that I've been meaning to ask you. You mentioned The Nine and Deep Space Nine, and then there was this conversation, and then reptilians came up into it. And, you know, I have this sort of a general sense of very strong hesitancy to any of the reptilian stories as something literal. And I can get it on this, you know, metaphor level of this, you know, someone who is more violent or in the reptilian part of their brain, you know, how you can kind of almost like see their true intentions or things like that. But the other part of what really, I have a really big red flag for me is we talked about this, you know, Alex Jones type, David Icke type idea of, you know, David Icke's telling everyone the world is controlled by reptilians, and Alex Jones telling everyone that the world is controlled by whatever, New World Order, Zionists, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, Alex Jones is the half of the equation that tells you, get your guns, you got to fight the New World Order. But then there's always that sort of like, well, you're not really going to fight that guy down the street or your neighborhood policeman or whatever.
Oh.
They're still human. But when you put that twist on it of, and this is where what I see, to me, Alex Jones is incredibly fascist. And particularly, you know, it's this idea of like blaming the Jews, blaming the banker. I mean, I'm not saying that there aren't corrupt Zionists, that not saying there aren't corrupt bankers. I'm just saying that you get to these sort of overgeneralizations. And then how do you, if you go to your classic fascist movement, what do? You could say, we don't let black people vote because they're only part human. You could say that it's okay to exterminate Jews during the Holocaust because they're not even human. And I think when you have this idea of you have to fight the New World Order, get your guns, fight the New World Order, oh, and by the way, they're not even human.
Right.
I, that's the huge red flag for me, is a group with fascist tendencies that's starting to say their enemy isn't even human. They might look human, but they're not even human. It seems like a really huge red flag to me. However, yeah,
I totally agree.
I just want to throw one last detail in there. So it got me thinking of, in Deep Space Nine, I only watched like a season or two of it, but I remember there was a season where they were invaded by these shapeshifters, and they had all these sort of almost like Total Recall style like screening systems that would try and like weed out the shapeshifters among them. So it was like you had to go through crazy like airport security, TSA style security, where they'd probe you to make sure you weren't a shapeshifter. Yeah. And I just wonder if that factors anywhere in there. I just want to throw that I know it's probably a huge subject, but if you could address that at all.
It's like dogs and Terminator.
I think that the entire point you're making is valid. I think that characterizing people, especially the government, which is the favorite enemy, which actually you can't do anything about or whatever, and tracking back their symbolism of using the dragon and draconian or totally reptile brained means of blood sacrifice evolved into giant war, evolved into watch sacrifice on TV and be okay with war on the other side of the world. I think that that's all very reptilian brained, and the metaphor is there and it's done. Now, outside of that, I've just come into far too many cases of contact that were outside of Icke's literature, just in going through abductions before Icke really jumped on the scene, where this draconian reptilian race, even if they're an interdimensional race that represents the opposite of what Kundalini snakes do in ancient civilizations and ancient alien wars, if that's even a thing, I don't even know. I do see there being this species that's as, they're as credible as the Greys, which means nothing. So if you walked up to me one day and said, you know, okay, here's the reptilians, and then you kicked it over like it was just a theater set of the moon and said, see, we never went there, I'd be like, okay, and I'd move on with my research. But so far the data has shown that outside of the political history, outside of Ike and the people who may be working agencies for him or whatever, there are almost as many people that think they're abducted by Greys, but we're talking about thousands, hundreds of thousands just in the U.S. And then there's a huge percentage of those people where the reptilian thing comes in.
What's and of weird course, is the good reptilians kind of throw it off too.
Yeah, yeah. Of course, this could be stuff planted in to make the reptilians.
I missed that last sentence. What'd you say, Violator?
The good reptilians kind of throw off that whole, they're all like evil, you know, warrior-like culture, and all of a sudden one comes and fixes your spine or something.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you have Anya Briggs was supposedly helped by a reptilian in her bedroom with a rotator disc. James Casbolt, I believe. No, I'm sorry, an unnamed Dulcie underground base guy. Not credible whatsoever. Who had like a 4-hour story detailing the different levels of security he was allowed into.
And oh, I saw that. That was on Camelot, right? Project Camelot.
Well, did he have a face? Like, did they show a man talking?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. This is one of these ones that just wait. Do you know? I'm trying to think of who you're talking about now.
This guy who's trained for underwater stuff and was talking about the underwater bases, and Aaron he went McCollum. On for 4 hours. Yeah, yeah, yeah. That fucking
guy, yeah. Super Soldier Aaron McCollum, who supposedly my labbed Anya Briggs just mentioned, but I forgot what that last thing I was saying. I can make it a wrap there.
The helpful reptilian stories.
Oh, yeah, there does seem to be this whole race of like, helpful reptilians. This one guy who's in this underground base, he says he's only let through these different parts of security access, but this reptilian helped him understand things or give him a certain passcode so he could see what was really going on. The reptilian desired that humans know what's going on in the Dulcie bases and whatever. Of course, could all be metaphors for underworld-dwelling demons, the unconscious, the deviants in ourselves. We don't have the bravery to deal with, but that's what the abduction data shows.
You know what's interesting to me? I love the movie Dark Crystal, and the Skeksis, which I always thought looked like vultures. Like I've always thought of them as like vulture people. I watched a behind-the-scenes making of the Dark Crystal, and Jim Henson refers to them as reptilians.
Right, I remember that. Totally.
That's odd.
Well, I was gonna, the interesting about those reptilians is that they, in the movie, they're merely like the other aspect of the mystics, and at the end of the movie they unite and they form this glowing
precisely.
White
beam.
The Urkfees, they become the Urkfees. Totally.
Yeah. Yeah, so I think that's interesting.
It's extra weird.
Well, that's where I was kind of going with this, because you guys were talking before about how even to use the phrase alien implies something other, and I think that the Dark Crystal kind of brings it home for me, is this might be one aspect of our persona, even if it's a dark part of ourselves or a more basic animalistic sense or however you want to take that, it's still a part of us.
I have an issue with the downplaying of like the subconscious in terms of its unreality or something. Like it's like, oh, if it's the subconscious, it's like a write-off. It's like, no, subconscious is a very real thing, and the archetypes that are universal in the subconscious have more, reality to them than I think we often give them credit. It's like when people say, oh, that's just semantics or something. It's like, no, there's something to that. That's a whole world. So.
Sure. Yeah. Especially when there's patterns or gods start showing up in different centuries and people didn't do any religious history homework, but all of a sudden they wake up and they're channeling those gods. Very interesting stuff.
All right, Bill's given us the signal here. He's the one recording today. He's got to run. So this is where we're gonna have to wrap it up. Anybody want to plug anything, throw out your websites real quick at the end here, or...
Book 2, yay!
Just look Violator Hellspawn on Facebook. I think you got all my other information.
Yeah, thanks for joining us, guys.
Secret Moon, if you want us. Thank you, guys.
An absolute pleasure getting to talk to everybody today. Be well, all right?
Break all me right, off thanks. A piece of that Kit Kat bar.
Motherfucker! Oh, no.